Moving into item number 10, 2018-19 sport fishing rules, rule simplification. This is a briefing, so Steve, I'll let you lead her off.
Commissioners, directors Unsworth and Storr, I'm very, very excited to be here to talk about something other than salmon policy development today. So, with me today, I have Chad Jackson, our Region 2 Fish Program Manager, and Chris Donnelly, who's already been up here once. We're going to talk today just a briefing about our process for sport fishing rules simplification. But I do want to acknowledge folks that aren't up here at the table. I know Kelly Henderson, I think, is in the back, and Ben Power have been instrumental in helping us get this effort started, as well as all the district staff throughout the state. A lot of hours have gone into where we are already, so please understand there's many, many folks that are trying to help make this come together. Our presentation today will review the objectives of our proposals, the process that we are undertaking, the timeline, and how much public involvement we've had to date already. We'll talk briefly about the high-level view of the proposals. We won't get into the very specific details of the rivers and streams, and then the next steps for the commission as well as public engagement in the process. I've heard a number of references today already to the Wild Futures meetings that were held a few years back. The idea of trying to make our rules easier to understand and reduce the size of our fishing pamphlet were one of the most requested items from those meetings. Our objective of this process is indeed to reduce that complexity and make the rules easier to understand. We'd like to take this tome and reduce it from the 135 pages to something reasonable. Many of you may recall the days when it was about a four inch by 10 inch thing that you could slide into your back pocket. Well, we don't think we're going to get there, but we'd like to try to get as far close to that as possible. The changes that we're going to talk about through this fall would apply to freshwater fisheries in the state. And these will mostly want to point out that we're still going to have a lot of exemptions in the pamphlet from statewide rules because of steelhead and salmon that cause us to have seasons that aren't what we might call a general season. And so as I go through this, just be aware we're going to have a lot of exceptions still in the pamphlet, and we're not talking about changing things like getting rid of fly fishing on the Yakima River. You know, we understand there's a diversity of opportunities out there, and those are going to still exist, even though we're trying to make things as consistent and simple as possible. This is a three-year process. At least I really hope we can get it done in 3 years. I don't want it to drag on any longer. I'm going to make a career out of this. The first year here, 2017, like I said, we're going to work on these freshwater rules and the species there, and these will become effective next July, which is when our pamphlet starts over again. In year two, we'd like to try to tackle salmon, and there's a lot of complexity that is introduced into our rules due to salmon, and we know there's a lot of challenges with the salmon regulations and trying to simplify them, especially when we have international treaties and co-manager agreements, court orders. Those are going to be a real challenge for us next year. And then year three, 2019, we'd like to take a crack at the marine fish and shellfish and see if we can't have a set of rules when we're done that's easier to understand and less complex than where we are today. The timeline, we've been at this since January, meeting with staff. I can tell you that each of the district staff have tried to hold on to their rules with tenacity and clinging to their rules, and they don't want to give up on the things that they've worked so hard to get into place. And so this has been a long process, and there's a real credit to the staff out there for the conservation mindset that they've approached this and really working hard to make sure we're not reducing our conservation efforts as we're going forward. So we put out a news release in September, and we've got a website available for folks to comment on the general policy level proposals that we've already put out. We've engaged in 6 regional workshops around the state, 1 in each region. We are here to brief you folks on the process today. Recall, this is actually the official kickoff of the process. We hope to have all of the regulations filed on the November 2nd, and that's when the very specific regulations for each lake and river will be available for the public to look at. We will add those to the webpage so that they can see those. We will take public comment on those through the end of November. So we essentially have nearly 3 months for the public to engage in this process. On our meeting on December 8th and 9th, we'll come back to you and have a briefing of what the public has spoken to us about and offer the public an opportunity to testify to you directly. I believe that will be on the 9th, which would be the Saturday, to allow the public to be here. And then the meeting on January 19th and 20th, we would come back to you with recommendations from the agency and an opportunity for you folks to make a decision on where to go with these proposals. And again, July 1st of 2018 is when they would take effect. I'm going to briefly go through some of the higher level policy proposals that we're talking about, and then Chad and Chris will walk you through some of the stream and lake general concepts that we've been working with. One of the proposals that we have is to eliminate our statewide prohibition on chumming. We do have a few places where we've exempted it. We don't feel that there's a real biological issue here. This is more of a social issue for folks. Some of our constituents would also say there's a bit of a perhaps pollution type nexus there as well. But we would like to remove the prohibition on chumming and allow that to be used statewide. We currently have a rule on the books that says that if you're fishing with bait and you catch a trout, even if you release that trout, it counts towards your daily limit. And so if you're in a lake and you catch and release 5 trout with bait, you would essentially have reached your daily limit and would be required to be done fishing for trout for the day. That's a regulation that presents a lot of enforcement challenges for us. We don't know that it's significant biologically to these populations, and we're proposing to remove that from our restrictions at this time. Duplicative landowner rules. We have a number of regulations in our pamphlet where places are either closed or we have prohibitions on the types of boats or motors that can be used that essentially mirror what a local jurisdiction has asked us to do. We feel that it's added unnecessary responsibility and language to our regulations that we don't necessarily need to have, and we're proposing to remove most of those from our pamphlet. So if there isn't a fishing reason to have a motor restriction on a lake, we would let the local jurisdiction enforce it, notify the public, and essentially handle that rule from their perspective. There are still some places where we have quality fisheries that we want to maintain a different experience where we would, from a fishing perspective, we wouldn't perhaps allow motors on a lake, and we would continue to have those. Eastern brook trout, this is an introduced species that competes with some of our native fish, mostly bull trout. In many of our places where brook trout have been introduced, they're stunted and overpopulated. So our proposal here is to eliminate any daily limits or minimum sizes for brook trout throughout the state. The intent is to try to catch and eliminate as many of those fish as we possibly can and improve the quality of those habitats for our native stocks. Possession limit, we have a number of different definitions that we use in the possession limit between game fish, food fish, and shellfish. For this cycle, what we're talking about is standardizing the game fish possession limit to make sure it includes in the field and in transit within the definition, And as we move through the next few years, we'll tackle the other possession limits there, simply trying to provide consistent language for the possession limit for all of the different species or categories of fish. Want to warn you that there's likely to be just some technical changes. These are just rewording of some of the administrative code to make it clearer. They may not necessarily change the actual regulation of what the intent is, but just a heads up that you might see some of these as you look at that lovely administrative code. I think we're up around 400 pages for our rivers and lakes. So just be aware that there could be some items in there that we're going to label as technical changes, not really a rule change, but just trying to clarify language or clear things up a little bit. Okay? And with that, I think we're going to go on to the rivers and streams.
Good afternoon, Chairman Smith, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storr. Again, for the record, my name is Chad Jackson. I'm the Region 2 Fish Program Manager, and I'll be providing the briefing for our rivers and streams simplification. So the first one, open unless otherwise listed. So this is a change from our current paradigm where a stream is considered to be closed unless we specifically list it in the pamphlet as open under some sort of regulation. We're electing to change this because we have felt that it has increased complexity and confusion, especially for a variety of smaller tributaries and rivers, as well as about every regulation cycle, we would either get a proposal from the public or a request from the public to add an additional stream to the list that should be open, which increased the size of the pamphlet as well as the complexity. To maintain conservation by opening after a majority of smolts have migrated, we're still going to have the 2 fish daily limit, 8-inch minimum size. And while, like Steve said, there will still be exceptions for those areas that have salmon steelhead or other conservation reasons, the way I think about this is that we're trying to encompass 70-75% of the other streams more higher up in the watershed and allow some clarity for anglers there to know what the season is and reduce the pamphlet size. We're also looking to standardize the opener. We've had different ones around the state, three of them I believe, that start somewhere in June depending upon where you're at. What we're proposing is to have the standard statewide opener for the state be the Saturday before Memorial Day through October 31st. Next, we're looking to eliminate the mandatory steelhead retention rule that has been in effect in some areas over in the peninsula, down like in the Grand Ronde area. This won't include some areas in the upper Columbia like the Medhow because those are by ESA permit, so we'll still have to retain those. But we're looking at some other areas where we've done this. And essentially, it wasn't a very popular regulation with anglers. And also when we looked at the data, that it really had limited benefits for doing so. Second, we're looking to separate trout and steelhead rules. And so think of streams where we do plant smolts, where we do provide for steelhead fisheries, where we expect steelhead to come back. What we want to do here is in those streams separate out the limits so anglers know that there's a steelhead fishery area there and what their daily limit is, but also allow them to keep their daily limit of trout if they elect to do so. Next is the steelhead incidental retention. And so I would think about this as streams that where we don't plant smolts, where we don't have a high expectation of returning adults, or those streams that may not be listed in the pamphlet but may get an occasional stray steelhead. And so under this simplification, what we want to allow is if someone is out resident trout fishing and they happen to come across a hatchery steelhead, they're allowed to keep that steelhead if they wish. Whitefish only rules. So we had about 7 different whitefish rules across the state in different areas, most of those in eastern Washington. And they more or less achieved the same thing. It was either a late winter through spring, late fall through early winter. And so we discussed internally, and what we arrived at was that whitefish openers, if there's the opportunity to provide them in streams, would be December 1st through the last day in February. And again, this is to provide predictable seasons consistent across the state, consistent with wild steelhead protection. And then a couple others that deal with statewide size and daily limits. Game fish season, again, I already addressed this, the Saturday before Memorial Day to October 31st. For wild trout, excluding brook trout and Dolly Varden or slash bull trout, whatever you like to call them. Daily limit 2, minimum size 8 inches. In our coastal cutthroat areas, we're looking to increase that to 2 fish greater than minimum size 14 inches or where necessary catch and release regulations. And again, with the few exceptions around the state, bull trout, Dolly Varden will remain closed. As Steve addressed, brook trout will have no regulation, no daily limit, no minimum size, open when there's game fish or salmon seasons. Hatchery trout, so we have some areas where we have smolts that residualize and don't elect to leave for the ocean, and so where we have those opportunities, we're looking to have a daily limit of 2, no minimum size, open when there's open game fish or salmon seasons. And then the last one is that in these, what I'll call, mostly anadromous waters, but not all, where we have bass, channel catfish, or walleye in rivers and streams, we're proposing to deregulate there. No daily limit, no minimum size, open when there are game fish or salmon seasons. This would be consistent with our Columbia River and Snake River regulations. And with that, I'll turn it over to Chris Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storr. For the record, I'm Chris Donnelly, Region 1 Fish Program Manager in Spokane. Today I'll address the lake, pond, and reservoir proposals. So the first of those would be to standardize juvenile-only waters. We have multiple rules within the pamphlet around the state. Some are open to seniors, some open to disabled anglers, some open only to juveniles. So our proposal would be to provide a consistency across the state with the same rule that would allow juveniles, seniors, and disabled anglers to utilize those waters. Eliminate panfish special limits. We have multiple waters in the state that have a bag limit on panfish, a 25 fish limit on perch, or a 10 fish limit on crappie. All of those would be taken away. And there isn't any really biological benefit to have those, and we've done a lot of monitoring and research to determine that, and so our recommendation would be to not have those. Statewide standard lake seasons. When we started this process, I can't remember the exact number, but it strikes me that it was about 30 different combinations of seasons that we had in the state of Washington, and we propose to break that down to basically 6, which you can see listed there, with the default being year-round, March 1 through September 30 or November 30, fourth Saturday in April, which is our standard lowland lake trout fishery season, which would have 2 closures. The reason why we have those 2 closures is in places where we use fry, we needed to close it sooner to allow those fish to grow for the next season. And then the Friday after Thanksgiving, that's really our winter season. So there's about 6 lakes, maybe statewide, maybe slightly more than that, that used to open December 1st. We back that up to make it more marketable, essentially, around Black Friday, which is the Friday after Thanksgiving. Standard daily limits and minimum sizes. The stuff in red is what we've changed. The rest of that are the standard daily limits and minimum sizes that we've always had. And we added some additional trout limits there to give the fisheries biologists around the state the ability to try to manage those populations. So they now have a suite of choices from a season perspective, a suite of choices from a daily limit and size perspective that allows them to sort of maximize the opportunity and develop variable fishing opportunity for their bodies of water that they manage. And then kokanee, we had the 16 fish bag in places. We had a 5 fish bag on kokanee in places. We had an 8 fish bag on kokanee in places. So now we have a standard kokanee 10 fish daily limit, and that's additive to your trout. So in theory, you could harvest 5 trout as well as 10 kokanee. Seems like I skipped one. So how have we done outreach on this effort up to this point? We've had 6 public workshops around the region. A little bit disturbing from the perspective that in all 6 of those workshops, we had a total of 59 people attend. Seems to be a trend that we're seeing around public meetings, especially, I guess, around rules. It was a little bit disappointing. However, we did also open it to internet comment, online comment, which we've received about 500 up to this point. We still think it's early in the public comment period, and we expect that we're going to hear a tremendous amount more online from individuals. Like Steve talked about early in this presentation, we haven't put out the specifics yet, and those specifics will be out by November 2nd. So if somebody has a specific lake or stream of interest to them, they can look at the rules that impact that, the rule changes that impact that, by November 2nd. At that point, I believe we're going to get a number of different feedback from people about what their issues are on their specific bodies of water. Things that I think you need to look for as we go through this process that have generated some lively discussion both at the public meetings and also online are around the warm water rules, the panfish limits that we just talked about, removing the bag and daily limits on warm water fish, bass, walleye, channel, catfish, and rivers. Those seem to be drawing some public concern. Chumming, which caught us a little off by surprise, but individuals seem to view that as both maybe a potentially over-harvest issue or poaching issue, a pollution issue, a few things that we didn't expect when we proposed that. And then the fishing for trout with bait and it counting against your daily limit. So our perspective was that simplifies things. A lot of folks see that as an issue, and they did not want us to remove that. So you very likely are going to hear more public feedback about that. So we will complete a summary of all public feedback, not only the public meetings, but also the online feedback, and you will see that at the December meeting. So just to review the timeline, next steps, November 2nd, the actual specific rules come out water body by water body. November 30th, the comments period ends online. We come back and we'll visit with you December 8th and 9th and give you a complete rundown on those comments that we heard. I'm sure between the 8th and 9th and January 19th and 20th, we'll have some lively discussion about these rule changes, and the commission will take action in mid-January on that. And then to remind you, the rules that we will be taking action on go into effect July 1st, 2018.
We've heard a lot today about trying to make opportunities for younger people, and I saw that you want to synchronize the rules on youth, disabled, and seniors. It surprises me now when I go to the movies and somebody asks me if I want a senior's discount. It's like, really? But I'm technically a senior by many indices. In fishing, I have an assumption that some of our non-disabled younger seniors are probably expert fishers, the people that have fished all their lives. So my question is, what is the age of a senior for purposes of your rules? And embedded in that is a question is, if it's a young senior, are we allowing non-disabled young seniors to fish on these same lakes with the youth and the disabled, taking away an opportunity for them?
So the age for a senior in our licensing system is 70.
Okay.
So we that's certainly a concern that we've heard from some of our staff, is that are you taking away youth opportunities? We think it's providing opportunities for a lot of folks that are perhaps deserving of those. Surprisingly, we haven't heard too much about it from the public so far. So.
Biology question that's pretty uneducated. So bass and walleye in the lakes, are they also the ones that are in the rivers? Do they move in and out? Where are bass and walleye in rivers?
So to be very clear about that rule, this is a lot different than the Columbia River, where we have a tremendous number of bass, walleye, channel catfish in the system, and controversial to remove that rule off. What I say about this rule, when we're saying we're going to remove bass, walleye, channel catfish rules in all rivers statewide, there's some exceptions. The Pondere River, we are not going to remove those rules because that is managed as a bass fishery, right? Lake Spokane, which is part of the Spokane River, would be an exception as well. So those exceptions get listed on November 2nd. The rule is really about things like if you catch a smallmouth bass in the Chehalis River that we're actively managing for fall Chinook, spring Chinook, and steelhead, why would we not let you harvest that fish, regardless of size or number? That's the concept behind it. And so we certainly will have to winnow out the exceptions where we want warm water fish and then apply that broadly where we think there's a good conservation reason to allow people to harvest any warm water fish they encounter.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions, and maybe if you could back up to the most previous slide there, that last one of the schedule, we'll do it. And it has to do with public comment. So public comment period ends on November 30th. Then we have a public hearing on December 8th and 9th, where I think you said public comment would be accepted at that hearing.
Correct.
And then January 19th and 20th, I presume public comment would be accepted at that meeting as well.
Usually the protocol for the commission is to have the one public hearing and not have testimony on a on an action item during a meeting date. Now, I believe I've got that right, if Bill wants to correct me.
Okay.
Councillor Freeman.
And my second question is on your eliminate panfish special limits, removing daily limits for panfish species such as bluegill, crappie, and perch on specific waters. What are the kind of specific waters you're speaking of? And when you balance that out with maybe just a general conservation ethic of having a limit of some sort, as opposed to seeing somebody come in with 50 or 60 or 70 at a time.
Yeah. So there's a number of lakes around the state, a handful where we have some 9-inch minimum sizes on black crappie. In most of those waters, what we're finding is, although we desired to create a trophy crappie fishery or a quality crappie fishery, the fish can't attain a 9-inch size. So we have a very small window of harvest available, with most of the fish not being available to harvest. Then we have a handful of lakes in central eastern Washington that have limits on crappie or bluegill or yellow perch. So Potholes Reservoir, Banks Lake, Moses Lake, I think Sprague Lake. What we know in Moses Lake, Potholes, Banks Lake, the catch per unit effort on most of those panfish is very low under the current populations that we have. Back in the heyday, I can remember as a youth catching buckets of crappie in Moses Lake, and I don't know that that's where we are today, and maybe I'll let either Chad or Chris elaborate on that. But those would be the lakes where those special rules are in place, that under this proposal those would go away. But maybe if you guys want to talk a little bit more about the biology and what we think is limiting those stocks over there.
Thank you, Commissioner McIsaac. So, yeah, Steve's right. There's probably, off the top of my head, somewhere between 7 and 10 lakes statewide where we have this total for the state. And the combined limits, depending upon which lake, can be anywhere from a daily limit with the different species of 35 up to 50 or 60. And so in the big waters, the limiting factors that we found are primarily walleye predation. These big reservoirs historically didn't have very robust walleye populations. And then Mother Nature, something happened with that, and it's become the predominant species there. I'd probably also throw in smallmouth. And so our success to control abundances of those predator species, we believe, is what's leading to what we see as periodic little upticks in certain species of panfish. But we do have a lot of monitoring in place on those reservoirs. It's dependent upon reservoir, all the way from those that the angler catches assessed annually to every handful of years, but as well as routine sampling. And what we see in that sampling is we can pick up some of those upticks, but what we don't see is what we consider to be high harvest that would warrant limits for that. And then again, on the panfish thing that I've told the public is, you know, the three of us as well as all the district bios, you know, we really took the simplification seriously, and we looked to where we could make things simpler, take things out of the pamphlet. And so this is our first attempt here, and we'll wait to see what public comment we get back, and if there's something surrounding panfish that we need to reconsider, we will do so.
One thing to add. So our general management paradigm around panfish is that they far out recruit exploitation. That's standard for those species. And so this question that's going to come to you from the public, I think, should be looked at from a social perspective versus a conservation issue. We're comfortable from a fish management side of this to just take the bag limits off, and we don't think we have a conservation issue.
Any other questions?
Well, I guess are we not going to expect to hear concerns from the bass and walleye fishers that they're losing forage, and that's going to contribute to loss of size in there?
Yes, you will hear that. We've heard it already.
Okay. And what am I supposed to say when I meet with the Inland Empire Bass Club?
So I think Chad hit on this, but I'll give it to you again, which is what drives abundance of panfish in all of these reservoirs is walleye and smallmouth bass predation, and the biggest extent of that is walleye. And so what we've worked with all these clubs on historically, I started 20 years ago and so did Chad, with trying to adjust bag limits on walleye to get sufficient enough exploitation to make room for panfish from a predation perspective. And so the message that I would give you that I hope you'd share with the public is we have really good walleye rules, and if they want more panfish, we can always expand the walleye bag limits. But protecting fish through harvest, because we're not seeing high exploitation rates of panfish, will not solve that issue. It is strictly driven by predation.
And if I could add one more thing, Commissioner Thornburn, so panfish aren't the only prey species in these waters. These larger reservoirs probably have 15 to 20 different species in them, as well as crayfish and some other stuff. And so it's not a simple relationship between those two species. Do bass eat panfish spawn? Absolutely. But there's lake whitefish, there's juvenile carp, there's juveniles of their own species, and so as well as non-native crayfish that are very abundant in there, and we know that they consume those. And so, and again, the statewide rule for panfish has been no limit around the state, and we haven't seen drop off in prey in those species as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One last question on the panfish limit. So how long has it been that there's been no limit on panfish statewide? And when you look at a lake where you're saying there's not that many panfish because there's too many walleye and predator, in that lake you get to catch as many panfish as you want, which you'd normally think of as there's a lot of them, but instead there's not very many, but there's no limit. In terms of simplification, are there a lot of other areas where there is no limit, and so it's a matter of pure simplification, or are these... Anyway, it doesn't sound simple to me right off the top of my head, but maybe the question is, how long has this been that there's been no panfish limit at all, and what do you see in those areas? Do you see people catching 75 or 100 a day or anything like that?
Yeah, so Commissioner McIsaac, I just turned my head back to our historian, Mr. Burley, there, and I think what I caught from his whisper was we've never had limits on those in most of the lakes. So, but we can, I'll verify that. I'll go through some of the old pamphlets and check that out for you. And then I'll let Chad or Chris speak to the exploitation.
Well, to clarify in terms of simplification, statewide, with the exception of six or seven waters, there's no limit on panfish. And for my career length, which is just about 25 years, we've never had limits anywhere other than these very specific waters. Just a little bit of clarity, though. I don't want you to be misled that there aren't very many panfish in these lakes. There's still a lot of panfish. It's just that what drives their abundances from a whole lot to a little bit is predation and not exploitation.
Okay. Thank you, guys.